What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Everything Horror Podcast. This is my first time hosting tonight, so I'm going to try not to sound like too much of a dork, but now I'm about to say some dorky shit. So, I am the cannibalistic, suicidistic, multilinguistic cannibal kid, Dustin Walker, and I'm going to be hosting tonight. We have also on the chat tonight, we have the homicidal, genocidal, cinephile, Paul Dulski. What's up, Paul?
Not much, man. Genome. I just need to put that down on my resume now. For like, maybe that might fit good for my hobby, where I like to walk around the beach and just like stalk the shit out of other women. And then like, and then go to Tessa and be like, Tessa, I think we should like totally like go knock on their door.
And also tonight we have the purveyor of perversions, the very nice, very evil Miss Tessa Baker. What's up, Tessa?
Oh, not much, Dustin. Thank you for the title.
So recently we did a podcast where we had Christelle Labella on, and we talked about the 1983 Robert Hiltzik classic, Sleepaway Camp. And we kind of briefly touched on the sequels on that one, but nobody was really a fan of them. Like, personally, I love the sequels, but I know they're not great movies. They're just different movies. So I figured we'd talk about two and three today.
Yeah, they're very different in a unique own way, not to interrupt you. But yeah, I mean, some of the kills were fun.
Yeah. Yeah, fun kills, very cheap. It's just a very different movie.
Oh, yeah.
But we touched on it in the last one. The first Sleepaway Camp is more of a whodunit slasher. It's more of a serious, darker tone to it. In 1986, I think it was, Robert Hiltzik wrote a script for a follow-up, Sleepaway Camp 2. And the studios were not a fan of it, so they just offered to buy the name Sleepaway Camp 2 from Robert Hiltzik, and they just came up with their own script. They wanted to go a more comedic, light-toned route, so they handed off to Fritz Gordon and Michael Simpson to direct. Fritz Gordon to write, Michael Simpson to direct. But Felissa Rose read for the Angela Baker part, but they didn't feel she was right for the comedic tone of it. So I think they always had Pamela Springsteen in mind for the role. I think that had a lot to do with probably the funding to get the movie even funded. But before we jump into the movie, just how would you guys compare Pamela Springsteen's Angela Baker to Felissa Rose's Angela Baker? Do you think that it's possible that Felissa Rose grew up to be this Angela Baker, or is it just too far removed from the original material?
I think it's too far removed. I don't see Felissa Rose as being so happy and chipper and stuff, and considering the fact that in the original Sleepaway Camp, she was very quiet and reserved, except for when she spoke to Paul or Ricky, which we all know what happened to Paul in that movie. But anyways,
we talked about that too on the last episode.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think that Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3, Angela versus Felissa Rose, it's like two different people. Like, I don't see it being like the same Angela. I mean, I appreciate their like change up take on Angela and maybe trying to make this Angela out to be like reformed, or what's the word I'm looking for? Transformed in a way that she was cured, for lack of better wording, from the psych ward and the sex change and all that jazz. But I don't know. I like the Felissa Rose approach to Angela better. It's more creepy, I guess, versus this Angela. She's funny and really really fucking weird with her over chipperness that made me want to fucking strangle her myself. But that's besides the point. You know, it's just like, it's like, yeah, I get it. You don't like people being naughty and perversion and fornicating and drugs and alcohol and this and that and everything. But I was like, do you really have to be so fucking chipper about it? Like, really? It's just one of those things where I'm just like, I really can't take this Angela seriously. And I know that's not, I know that's the point. You're not supposed to take her seriously. She's supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be more of like a comedy horror twist versus the original Sleepaway Camp with Angela being it more of like, I guess, the mysterious homicidal vibe. But I don't know. This Angela, just this version of Angela in 2 and 3, I just wanted to fucking kill her. I'm like, no, you're too chipper. Tone down the chipper, please. So those are my thoughts.
What did you think, Paul?
My thoughts is clearly not going to be as long as Tessa's, but anyway, to get to it, I guess, is, yeah, I think Felicia Rowe does more of a better job when it comes to that, just because of the original film. I mean, nothing can beat that iconic face at the end. And it's not like Pamela Springsteen did anything like, you know, like horrifying or like some type of weird look to give, like, I don't know, the counselors or whatever. Kind of like with Felicia Rowe, like, who was she even making that face at again to? Like, I don't remember. I think she was just doing it just because they were just like, ha ha ha, surprise, you know, like, ha ha. Anyway, the point of this is, like, yeah, it's a fun, cheesy little film. It's sad that they had to go through the whole, like, it had to be bought by other people, basically, to put their filthy, dirty paws in into something that could have been better, possibly. I mean, I don't know if that's what Return to Sleepaway Camp was supposed to be. Like, and I know eventually we'll talk about that movie, maybe. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to say, though, is I'm wondering, like, how much more different the other script compared to what we got changed, like, for really everything, I guess. I mean, I know, like Dustin said, it's a comedic, you're supposed to be, like, having a comedic horror, but honestly, I don't even find anything funny in it, except for maybe two things, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I say it's a funny movie, it's not laugh out loud funny. I probably barely crack a smile when I watch it, but
or like a white chuckle, yeah.
It puts me in a good mood to watch these movies, whereas the first one, which I love the first one, but it's more of like a mellow. It's a funny movie in its own right, too. It has a lot of funny stuff going on it, but 2 and 3, definitely more intentional with the comedy. But one thing I wanted to note about the Pamela Springsteen, Angela Baker, is maybe you guys have some insight on it, but you know, I said the theory in the last one that I think that they are two different people. It's not the same Angela Baker. So if, let's say, this is my own fan theory. So Felicia Rose goes to the mental hospital and she meets the Pamela Springsteen's character.
Oh, yep.
And Pamela just hears the stories, but I think Pamela Springsteen's Angela Baker is more inspired by Crazy Aunt Martha, Desiree Gould's character, than Felicia Rose's Angela Baker. Just really upbeat, cheerful. I don't know. Did you could you guys see that? Maybe she was inspired. If this isn't the original Angela Baker, this is the Angel of Death Angela Baker. Do you think she could have been inspired by Crazy Aunt Martha?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I could see that connection.
Yeah, I just think it'd be it's just a fun way to look at Angela Baker and the sequels. But yeah, talking about what bringing up what you just mentioned, Paul, about too bad we didn't get the original script for the sequel. If return to Sleepaway Camp was any indication of what that script would have been, then we were better off with 2 and 3 than the fourth one, Return to Sleepaway Camp. But anyway, we can jump into the movie now, part 2.
Well, first, it's sad that, like, you know, the lady that did play Aunt Martha passed away last year on May 24th, so that sucks.
Yeah, Desiree Gould. I think that's how you pronounce her name anyway.
That sounds right to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, just to touch on before we do go into it, but for what you were saying about the two different Angelas, I don't know. I'm going to almost say it was maybe just, I'll be that guy that said, no, I don't think so. I could see like Felicia Rose's character was like the same one in 2. Like she actually got a full operation, which I don't know how that would be really possible per se. But I mean, as one of the characters in that movie said, it's like, oh, look at where the taxpayers' money went. We had to pay for that surgery. So I don't know. I mean, I would almost feel like it's still the same person. Like maybe like what to say for the example right now is that that she had plastic surgery, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's never hinted at that it's not the same person. I just think it'd have been fun if, you know, with Pamela Springsteen doing 2 and 3, if they came back with a 4. And Felissa Rose is now the heroine. She's out to reclaim her name, that it wasn't her doing all these murders, and she's going to take revenge on the Pamela Springsteen, the fake Angela Death. I think that could have been a fun for a fourth movie. Angela Baker versus Angela Baker.
Kind of like with Friday the 13th with, what was it, part 5, where it was
the ambulance driver.
Imposter. Yeah, the imposter there.
Oh yeah,
Roy.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been. Like it. Yeah, it would have been interesting if we saw like Jason meet Roy kind of moment.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Part 2 opens up. We have the fire. Within like 3 minutes of the movie, we already see the tone has switched from the original to a more comedic tone. We got Angela whacking Phoebe, I think was her name was, whacking her in the head with a damn branch. And it just looks like somebody slung fucking mud and blood all over the side of her head. And she barely touches her head. Looks like she's having a headache. She falls to the ground. Angela cuts her tongues out. You can see her lip quivering and her eyes blinking when they're cutting the tongue out and the blood spraying on her face. I mean, it's obvious they didn't care too much for the realism in this one with the kills and everything. They weren't too worried about, I guess they didn't have much of a budget to reshoot a lot of scenes. 2 and 3 were filmed. Within 6 weeks, they wrote part 3 while they were shooting part 2, and they just decided, let's do a third movie. The budget for the original Sleepaway Camp was $350,000. The budgets for 2 and 3 together were $465,000 for both films. So, yeah, it's a much smaller budget to be balanced between the two films. But what did you guys think of the – like, did you guys have any favorite kills? From 2. Well, I know what Tessa's favorite kill is, but
it's probably Paul's favorite too, because it's the just desserts like one, and that would be Allie. I mentioned her when we talked about the original Sleepaway Camp. I kind of touched on Sleepaway Camp 2 a little bit, but yeah, Allie with the porta potty scene, getting stabbed in the back a couple of times, and then her ass shoved into the porta potty, getting covered in leeches and shit and everything,
pissed and everything. Yeah,
it was just good. Perfect. And to anybody who's listening to this currently, you will be hearing our daughter gabbing in the background. She's very vocal today, so if you hear her. She's putting in her own 2 cents over here.
No, she's looking for me. I had just heard her calling for daddy.
Yep. Looking for dada.
Yep.
Dada's in the office.
Yeah, anyway. I'm in the office. But yeah, no, the Porta Potty is definitely the favorite scene, I think. And like even earlier, just to kind of get us a refresher again, while we watched it and stuff like that. But once we realized like we didn't have enough time to maybe watch like three, we quickly like went through this video channel on YouTube that pretty much did like a kill count, and he kind of briefly swept us through like both films to kind of get us caught up. But yeah, the Porta Potty is the golden kill, I would say, of that movie. Everything else was just like mediocre. I mean, kind of like with the kill that you just said, Justin, with the tree branch to the face and then the tongue gets cut out. I think that's like probably the weirdest part anyway, just because it's like it just, you can definitely tell right there that the acting would not super A.
So like I said, number three, that was filmed in the same 6 weeks. It was written while they were making part two. So I mean, there's no pre-production on that movie. They just threw out a fucking script real quick and jumped right into it. So, y'all have any thoughts on three? I don't know. Did y'all get a chance to watch it or?
Yeah, we've seen it. We just didn't get a chance to rewatch it for like the purpose of this, but we have seen it, and I love a couple kills from this movie. I think everybody's favorite has to be the lawnmower. And as I kind of mentioned like a second ago, how Angela somehow managed to like hijack a garbage truck to run over the original counselor lady that was actually supposed to be going to the camp, and instead throws her in the fucking trash can thing, grabbed her shit, and like gets onto the bus, which I thought was really hilarious, and probably that's where the comedic aspect continued with the third one, especially right off the first like what 5 minutes into it.
Yeah, milkshake. I'm going to fucking camp today. But, the scene where she gets run over. I don't know if you guys noticed, but when the dump truck hits the dummy that's supposed to be Maria, you can see like the head fall off of it briefly.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, you can see the head fall off of the dummy. But did you guys notice the number on the
dump truck? I didn't.
The number
anyway.
Was did you notice, Tessa? The nope. Number was the address of the from Elm Street, the Elm Street house.
Really?
The home address. Yeah.
That's funny.
Clever.
Yeah, 1428, I think it was.
1428.
But yeah, so that's
that wasn't like Johnny Depp's house, right? That wasn't Johnny Depp's house.
No, that
house,
was
right?
Nancy's house.
Nancy, yes, yes. Yeah. I still gotta say real quick though that Johnny Depp like fucking killing Nightmare on Elm Street, it's gotta be like the most ridiculous and like best kill for one of the kind of like that movie and right. The franchise at the time. It's because it's just so fun to watch, I guess.
Right, and get sucked into the bed and the blood geysers out of it.
And it's right, just too much blood, but whatever.
And her mom, or his mom, just walks in and just starts screaming like she sees a burglar in her house and not this bed spewing blood.
I think that would like one of Johnny Depp's like 5 second fame type of roles.
Well, when Wes Craven shot Scream, that's the reason he cast Skeet Ulrich in that role, is because he looks so much like Johnny Depp from Nightmare on Elm Street.
I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, that I think Skeet Ulrich, when they first show him, he's like, no, it's Rose McGowan. She's wearing Johnny Depp's football jersey. And when you first see her in the movie.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Yeah, no, it's the, like, I don't know. I'm trying to, like, really think of, like, when I saw Teenage Wasteland, like, I didn't mind it, but, it's just almost like, how the fuck do these people still don't realize this is her, you know? Even though I don't know. I don't get it. And then, like, it just gets better and better. And I think one of the kills we kind of forgot to mention about in number two, because it does play out with three, is the cop's son, who gets beheaded in two. And this is also supposed to be the same cop that arrested Andrew back in the first movie. So anyway, he comes back for the third one, technically. But this time he's not really a cop. He's a counselor. And it's just, like, I'll be jumping to this part real quick because I just want to say it and get it done with. But it's just like, why not just fucking have shot her? Like, just get it over with for what she did, for what she did to his son. Like, why not just fucking just do her in, you know? And instead, it just plays out to be this ridiculous, like, Andrew was holding something behind her back, and it's just like, seriously, dude. Like, and then he's like, "What are you gonna do? You gonna knife me? You gonna cut me? You gonna do this? Do that?
You gonna cut, like, my head off like you did my son?"
Done. Yeah. No. I'm gonna do a gun. And it's just like three bullets or four bullets, maybe, and then that was it. It's just like, what a ridiculous man to just let that happen.
I like the fact that they used the same actress for Angela as they did in two. At least they were consistent with that, even though they, like, changed up her personal style to fashion her after the girl she ran over with the garbage truck. I didn't think it was horrible, but I would definitely have to say that, like, my whole favorite part of the whole thing is when that, like, bitch of a counselor gets her fucking head taken off with the lawnmower after she's buried up to her neck.
Right. Yeah, Lily.
Yeah, Lily. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love that scene.
But other than that, it wasn't horrible, but it wasn't my favorite out of the whole franchise. It had its moments.
Yeah, that movie was, like, super heavily edited by the MPAA. They made them take so many of the kills out. I think one of the notes they got back was that the scene where, I can't think of her name, where she's going up the flagpole. They said that one of the MPAA censors physically got ill, so they had to take pretty much that whole scene out. And most of the scenes, like where Lily gets her head cut off with the lawnmower, they had to cut all of that out pretty much. It just got super heavily edited by the MPAA. They were going to give them an X rating, and they were contractually obligated to get an R for that film.
So, yeah, they also had to take out, or should I say, do the up close shot of the guy that is tied to the tree that gets his arm cut off.
Yeah, that's probably the worst one. We're talking about a movie where, like, four people get killed with a stick, but that's probably the worst kill of the movie.
Yeah, and just for the record, what year was the third film, like, technically released? I know they were filmed at the same time, two and three.
Yeah, they were both filmed in 87, but two was released in 88, and three was released in 89.
What a weird time, I guess, you know, when it came to film. It makes me wonder, like, what they could get away with now. That is why, right. Also, like, why not just do the unrated version now? I mean, unless they don't even have the that type of footage anymore with all these kills, unless they had to edit it down so much. I mean, I don't know.
The DP, I can't think of his name, once they edited out the films, he pretty much disposed of them. He sent them off somewhere, and then they disposed of them after, like, a year. He never expected to things like DVDs and bonus features. He said that's his biggest regret in life is that he didn't save all of that and release an unrated cut 20 years later. But so it's all gone forever. We'll never have any of those.
Wow, what a shame.
Yep.
What a shame.
If you get the DVD, they do have some of them. You can see some of where they was going with it. Like the kills are like way more graphic on the DVD, but it's like really shitty versions of them. Some of them don't even have sound. And
ah, yeah. Yeah, those type of one. Kind of like how they did the unrated version for like My Bloody Valentine and Silent Night,
right,
Deadly Night.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're still good, don't get me wrong, but like you could definitely tell like they didn't get the production, like the rest of the film, because obviously it wasn't originally in the film to begin with. So yeah.
And so with this film, like the whole story of it was you're gonna take some underprivileged inner city kids and mix them with some of the privileged rich kids from another neighborhood, and they're supposed to go out to this sharing and caring retreat. It's the same camp from the year before, which was Camp Rolling Hills, but they called this one Camp New Horizons. Camp New Horizons is the new one. It's the same camp under new ownership. All the good kids in the film are named after characters from the Brady Bunch. And all the bad kids in the film are named after characters from West Side Story. I don't know if you guys have seen the West Side Story, but it's fucking amazing. It was my pick for movie of the year since Malignant wasn't nominated. I really loved the new West Side Story. But anyway. But yeah, all the bad kids are named after West Side Story characters. And then
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, well, the counselors, Michael J. Pollard, is named after Herman Munster, so he's Herman, and then his wife is named Lily Munster.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, so like in the last movie, and like it's kind of a trope of these movies, you have the final girl. So the final girl of this film was, what was her name? Tracy Griffith's character. I got it written down somewhere. Tracy Griffith was Marsha Brady. So Marsha was our final girl of this film. What did you'll start with Tessa first? What did you think of Marsha comparatively in this movie? Do you think she was a good final girl, and how do you think she compares to Molly from last year's Sleepaway Camp?
She wasn't a bad final girl in comparison to Molly. She was more brassy, I guess. She didn't like scream when she came face to face with Angela like Molly did. She actually took action and went after Angela and actually stabbed her. Right. In the gut. Like, she wasn't gonna let her get away. Meanwhile, Molly's just like, I just need to get the fuck away from Angela. Like, I want nothing to do with Angela. I'm just gonna run as far as I can, as fast as I can, put as much distance between me and Angela as possible. And what's the other girl's name
again? Marsha.
Marsha. She's, yeah. Marsha's like, I'm not gonna let this bitch get away.
Right.
I'm gonna take matters into my own hands. Like, she had enough. So she was a better final girl than Molly because she actually took action and went after Angela.
Yeah, and to touch on that, D'Angelo should have definitely would have died if it wasn't for what's it fit that came in and basically threw her off of Angela.
Tony?
Yeah, Tony. Yeah, Tony.
Yep. So, yeah, I agree.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But then again, I bet if Sandra would have died, we never would have gotten, what was it, Survivor and Return to Return.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll touch on Survivor for a second. Like I said in that last podcast, it's only 20 minutes of footage that survived over the years. But yeah, I agree with everything you guys said about Marsha. I think she was a great subversion of expectations. When you think of a final girl, especially from this time period, they tend to be weak. Outside of somebody like Laurie Strode. I mean, she was a little weak in that movie too, but Halloween. She has the fight, yeah, in Halloween. But yeah, Marsha, she's not a virgin. When Tony wants to sleep with her, she whips out the fucking Jimmy hat. She's ready to go. Angela, when she breaks free, she goes after Angela with the axe. So she's not your typical final girl. That's not somebody. She's not the type of final girl we saw in movies at this time period. So I thought it was a little ahead of its time.
Oh, it was very ahead of its time. Just kind of like with Alien, like what, go back to 1979 with Alien. You know,
right,
that was Ripley, like one of that was one of the sci-fi movies that actually had a female as the protagonist, even though Ripley's role was made out to be a male. But you know, look what that did.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, so any favorite kills from three?
I'll just stick with the lawnmower one, and besides that one, I thought the tent scene was kind of nice.
Which one? The one where she burns everybody, or the one where she kills?
No,
the one where she puts the tent spikes through the guy.
Yeah, yes. Angels are pretty. Angels can fly.
Which the YouTuber kind of brought up an interesting perspective in a way. Dustin, maybe you might know how to answer this, actually. So how did that one tent blow up with the flare or whatever the fuck she threw into it? Like, what was in there that would make it blow up like that?
So I think they just fucked that up because it was like their first time doing something like that. But in the movie, she just pours a little bit of gasoline on her, but the whole time she's pouring it, it's like spraying all over her. So if that tent blew up, she's fucking blowing up too. But in the movie, you see Pamela Springsteen like jump back when it happens because everybody was caught off guard by how big that explosion was. And she actually almost gets hit because one of the wires flies off and like whips at her.
Jadum. She was a trooper.
Talking about Pamela?
Yes.
Yeah, she weighs like 100 pounds soaking wet. But she's having to drag these giant men all over the fucking camp when she kills them to hide bodies and shit. So they were constantly having to come up with ways to help her pick up the people that she was killing because she was so small. She couldn't pick these fucking people up.
No, but they all were nicely stacked in the fucking abandoned place. All these bodies had like hatchets or axes or something with like in them, except for like two of them, because they were the good people.
Right? Yeah, she has them all, and she ties up the three last winners, and they have to run through the cabins to find Marsha.
Yeah,
got all the bodies rigged up everywhere.
2 minutes.
Yeah.
You need to find her, otherwise.
but she tries to kill him anyway. I mean, she was gonna let Tony and Marsha go.
Yeah,
she had a crush on Tony.
Yep. She even admits it too. Like, I had a crush on you.
But personally, like, I like all the characters. Like, I don't think most of the kills, people are just getting whacked with sticks in this movie and then burned. But I like the firecracker kill.
Like you said earlier, Dustin, I mean, what else could they have done? I mean, everything they tried to, like, do, NPC or whatever, NPA, whatever the fuck.
Right, yeah.
Just, like, take it out!
Yeah, the scene where the girl gets dropped off the flagpole, they had a close-up shot of the head exploding when it hits the ground, and Angela was
hilarious.
Supposed to go over and scoop up some of the brains and eat it before she runs off singing. They had a shot in there originally where Michael J. Pollard, who was Herman in the movie, Angela was supposed to stab him through the dick with a hot poker and call it roasted wieners. They couldn't afford to do the shot, so they just whacked him with
rough
a stick.
Trade. It would have made you both cringe.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe one day if I ever find my Curse of the Wood Nymph movie I shot back in high school, I even have a callback to the stick kill when Herman dies, where he's getting the stick through the mouth. I put that in my movie.
I think you have it on YouTube.
I don't think I have that clip in on YouTube. Though. I might actually, it might be on there. I don't remember.
I don't know. I don't remember either. But I do know that that film is. You sent it to me one time.
We had probably the same budget on that film that they did for Sleepaway Camp 3, which was like $10.
I know that when we were watching like the kill count for like Return to Sleepaway Camp, Paul made a face at the part where the guy that was tied to the tree with the fish line tied to his
right,
you know,
and gets ripped off by the Jeep. I saw Paul make a face out of my peripheral because I purposefully watched his face when it happened because I'm like, for any male that sees this, they're going to be like,
yeah, the funniest part of that is the, you know, they tie it to the Jeep and she drives for like a freaking mile and then his wiener is still attached when the Jeep is like struggling to pull his wiener from his body. Got a pretty strong cock.
It must be Superman.
It's resilient.
Made
resilient. But yeah, so we talked about now, the kills, and I guess there's not much to talk about in 3.
No, not really, except for the guy that got tied up to get his arm ripped off and stuff. Like,
I think that was Bobby.
Yeah, that sounds right. Like, some of the shit he was saying, like, it's like, it was just too funny. like, you just definitely know that they were definitely trying to figure out something fucking cheesy for him to say right before his arms get ripped off. Like, right. Ooh, this is kind of, like, I forget exactly how he worded it, but it's like, oh, this is kind of kinky. Like, are we going to do it like they do it?
This is like campground bondage.
Yeah.
Campground bondage, yeah.
When do we screw? That's my favorite one.
When do we screw?
I really appreciate what you're doing for me. When do we screw? And then that scene would have been so easy to shoot. All he had to do was put his arms behind the tree. But instead he puts them inside his shirt when they rip it off. Which I don't know if you can see that in the movie, but at the end of it, you can see he's just sitting there with his arms in his shirt. And instead of having fucking stumps there, it's just his arms are in his shirt. So to make it look like his arms were actually ripped off.
I'm going to have to go back and look at that now. I wouldn't really paying too close attention, but now with you pointing that out, it makes me want to go back and see this.
It seems so simple. It's almost like they did it on purpose.
Well, obviously, I mean, they didn't think about, you know, they probably did, but they were like, nobody's going to really see it. It's like, it's just only going to be like a 2-second thing where we just show your body and that's it. Nobody's going to have time to see it. Right. But I think you see that part for like almost 5 to 6 seconds. So it's like a little bit too long. So yeah, you would definitely have plenty of time. You'd be like, wait a minute, that lump or whatever is not supposed to be like that.
So you guys like Night of the Demons?
Night of the Demons, yes.
Arab in Sleepaway Camp 3, she was the Asian chick from Night of the Demons, which I don't remember her name in that movie, but
I knew she looked familiar.
Yeah, she looks familiar.
Yeah, I just could not put a name on her, or at least a film or something, but I did recognize her. I was like, God, she looks real familiar, and I cannot figure it out why, but so thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, and which I think I might have mentioned, I don't know, but the chick that plays Marsha, Tracy Griffith, that's Melanie Griffith's little sister, big Hollywood actress Melanie Griffith. Which they were.
I'm going to assume I should know this, but like right now,
Melanie Griffith. Yeah, she was like big in the 80s and 90s. I think my favorite movie from her is a really shitty movie called Cherry 2000, about this dude trying to get a sex robot.
Yeah, that rings a bell. Yeah.
I love Cherry 2000. If you guys,
me too. Yeah, me too.
It's on YouTube, I think.
Definitely a favorite.
Yeah,
a lot of movies are on YouTube now. Some are free. Some you have to pay like $3 for.
Dustin, have you ever heard of Highway to Hell?
Yes, I love Highway to Hell.
Yes.
Oh yeah, love how we do. That's the first movie that had Ben Stiller in it.
Yep, and Christy Swanson.
Yep.
It's
good. The Hell Cop or whatever he is. Has like the
Hell
hands
cop.
For cuffs.
Yep, Hell Cop.
That's funny.
Great movie.
It's another movie we could talk about on the podcast.
Yes.
I still want to. I haven't seen Void yet that you guys told me about. And I watched the trailer for it. And I'm like, this movie looks fucking amazing. I don't know why I've never seen it.
It has one of my favorite contortionists in it.
Contortionist.
Yeah.
Like a contortionist scene, or you have a list of favorite actual contortionists?
I have a few favorite contortionists that I like in movies, but this guy is fucking awesome. He's like totally like, it's like, holy shit. I didn't know you could move like that. Like, move like that, bend like that. It's like unbelievable.
That's incredible. I've never paid attention to contortionists before. I'll start looking for him in movies.
He's in Scary Story to Tell in the Dark as well.
I've seen that one.
He was the jangly man.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, like, so you remember the part where the jangly man is, like, climbing up the chair to get onto the table?
Right, yeah.
That's him.
Wasn't he also an alien?
No.
Who was the guy that... There was a... guy that did like contortion stuff for like the xenomorphs.
Yeah, that guy passed away. I forgot his name right now, but yeah, he
was another good
one.
Yeah,
he was really tall too,
ridiculously tall from what I remember.
Yeah, but yeah, that guy sadly passed away, but yeah, he was another one. He would be one of the original xenomorphs, so yeah.
Pretty cool.
So I guess, like, since we're talking cheesy stuff, I mean, there was a lot of cheesiness going on, even with 3, besides the stick beatings and stuff. But like even inside the cabins and the meetings, like, everything was just fucking cheesy. Right. And I don't know if they were really just like that. Oh, that almost makes me feel like they weren't really writing a script. It was almost like improv. I was wondering if that was something that they were trying to do. It was just like, well, you kind of got the idea of filming 2. Now we'll try to do something else, but like make it cheesy. And it was almost like some scenes were making it look as if they didn't really have a dialogue or some sort of like, what do this, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, the script was written in like a weekend probably, and that they probably spent another day or two for pre-production, so they probably just gave them like a general guideline of what they wanted in the scene and just let them do whatever they wanted.
Yeah, and that's why I really feel like it was more improv with 3 going into 3 is what I should say.
Yeah, they're like stumbling over their lines, and in low budget films like this, you don't have the luxury of redoing shit or throwing shit out, so you just got to use everything. So
yeah, and even when we were doing our film, we would only do a couple takes just to try to figure out different dialogue, really, because like maybe the one that I was thinking of wasn't really working out the way I wanted it. So then, you know, everybody would be like, well, what if this person said this instead and this and that? So we always tried to look at each other's advice, not just the main writers, you know, and that's the thing, speaking of which, Dustin, so how many writers were actually on Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3?
Just Fritz Gordon, which that's not even his real name. I guess he was just embarrassed to be making a Sleepaway Camp sequel, so he used an alias. I don't think that's his real name anyway. But yeah, Fritz Gordon was the only one that was the writer on these movies.
Hmm. Well, we got lucky on that, because most of the films nowadays have, like, what, fucking 5 million writers?
Well, and like you said, I mean, they probably ad-libbed a good portion of it. So.
Oh, they had to have. That's why, like watching it again, it made me almost feel like I was watching, like, an improv theater, like some sort of theater going on. Like, it wasn't like an actual movie in some of the scenes. Some scenes actually felt like they were fleshed out a little bit. Like it needed to be serious. Maybe would like the stick beating or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, that's one thing I like about the third one, is it feels more intimate than the other movies, or just like, we have a few more days at this camp, let's just make a movie real quick. So let's get some people and shoot them in the woods. We don't have to pay much to film.
We're already here, might as well fucking do it.
Right, it just feels more intimate. I like shit like that. Every time I watch this movie, it's not as good as the other two, but it just feels more intimate. I feel like the cast and crew really cared about, they were really happy with each other and they got along really good. It just comes across, I think, in the movie.
Oh, I'm pretty sure, well, they had to get along, you know?
Yeah.
Like, 6 weeks is a pretty long. And I can only imagine, like, some of these actors, what I bet they weren't even planning, like, I mean, obviously, they weren't planning to be shooting fucking two movies. They must have only knew about one. And then as they get there, it's like, oh, do you guys just want to do a third one? Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. It's like, I got nothing going on.
Fuck, you're my ride home.
Yeah, you're my ride home. I got to get on that bus.
So you guys have any favorite characters from the third movie?
Which hear yours first?
Mine?
Yeah.
I fucking love everybody. I love Riff with his little fucking weak ass raps. I love Snowboy with his terrible graffiti. I love the little slutty girl. I can't think of her name, who's trying to fuck Michael J. Pollard's old ass for some reason. The Asian chick from Night of the Demons. I mean, I pretty much like everybody in this movie. I even like Barney.
That's shocking. That's shocking. Honestly, I'd have to go with Bobby, I think. He was so out there and so spaced out that it's like he was the worst example of a blonde that you could possibly get.
One less politician, or one less idiot in politics, as Angela puts it.
Exactly. Exactly. But otherwise, that final girl at the end was definitely a really good addition, I think. Like, she really made it pretty believable to have. Mm-hmm. And that's always good, because, you know, with these type of weird slasher films, is what I'm going to go with. You know, sometimes, as Dustin, I think, was saying earlier, like, some of these characters, you just don't care if they live or die. In this case, I'm actually was glad that these people got to see another day.
What'd you think, Tessa? Any favorite characters?
I didn't think the cast at all was bad for this movie. I think everybody added their own touch of uniqueness to their characters. Because, like you said, you mentioned the girl that was from Night of the Demons. I like the fact that she appeared in this film. Because it's kind of funny, I actually watched Night of the Demons a couple of days ago.
Nice.
While Amara was taking a nap and I was trying to have some downtime from, you know,
being a
full-time mommy, because that's a 24/7 job, 365 days of the year. You don't get a break from that. Anyways, it is the most important job in the world, and I love it. But anyways, yeah, it was just kind of funny how I noticed that connection, and I'm like, wait, where have I seen her before? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I was like, she's in freaking Night of the Demons as the freaking doctor's, like, nurse's assistant girlfriend, and she ends up getting her freaking neck snapped in Night of the Demons.
I think those might have been her only two roles, too. I didn't look her up or anything, but I don't even think she had a Wikipedia.
I haven't seen her in anything else. I just remember her from Night of the Demons and Sleepaway Camp 3. So definitely her and their choice for the final girl for 3. I think those two were like my favorites. Everybody else wasn't bad, but those two girls were definitely my favorites.
Yep. So, what
I would give it a. I was gonna say I'll give this a solid 7.
7. What would you say, Tessa? 2 and 3.
For the campy comedic horror vibe, and for the I guess some of their little Easter eggs and stuff like that. And some of their kills that I really liked, especially to the people that really, really deserved the really nasty, like, good kills. I'll give it... I'm kind of teeter-tottering between a 6.5 and a 7.
Those are solid scores. So
yeah, just for the Easter egg alone, too, real quick, and I'll bump it to a 7.5 because of the Easter eggs.
Oh yeah. So, well, who would you recommend this movie to, or would you recommend it? Would you recommend it on as a standalone film, or as a sequel to Sleepaway Camp? Do you think it works on its own?
The first one definitely worked on its own for sure. As for the sequels, it's hard to say. Like,
it's like 2 and 3 go together, but like 1, 2, and 3 don't make sense together.
Yeah,
but like 2 and 3 go together in a sense, but like if you try to put the whole franchise or the whole group together, it doesn't make sense as a whole.
I would almost say 2 and 3 are its own thing, and then 1 and 5, which would be Return to Sleepaway Camp, I would say those two would work together, obviously, but just because Felicia Rhodes is also in both of those. Right. She comes back in Return, so that would be like the better storyline, I would say. It's almost like saying, like, with Halloween, you know, like 1, 2, and 3 just don't fucking work together. But then when you do the stupid Halloween with the Halloween 2018 version, it kind of goes together.
Oh, the original and the new ones?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that way. I mean, it's so stupid that there's a gap in between there, but... honestly, I just feel like it's really better that way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess if we really wanted to throw in the gap a little bit, if in that season, in that timeline, I would just throw in Season of the Witch. I know Michael Myers isn't in it, but it still would just kind of...
His mask is in it.
Yeah, and that's it. That's it, though.
It's like in a commercial. The Silver Shamrock, Silver Shamrock, I can't remember the name of it. Silver Shamrock Halloween or something.
Some shit like that, yeah. I mean, I know that basically was made for the trick-or-treaters, which that was probably the badass part about that film, but other than that, I think it would work, actually, because it was focused on the trick-or-treaters, and that supposedly would be taking place while Michael Myers is chained up in the fucking jail, mental house, wherever the fuck he is. And where he basically is when he comes back into 2018. So I guess that would help fill in the gaps a little bit.
Yeah. Talking about Halloween, I love the third movie a lot. but I don't accept a world where Michael Myers exists inside the same world as these killer androids from the third one. But I do like the third movie a lot. But I would separate three from the other Halloweens.
Gotcha.
But yeah, if you guys don't have anything else to add on to the Sleepaway Camp 2 or 3 films, personally me, anybody that grew up with me knows that I love these movies. I made all of my friends and all of their parents watch this all three of these movies growing up.
That's hilarious. I can only imagine their reactions.
I would literally watch these movies back to back to back every night. I loved all three of them. I loved all the behind the scenes stuff, and I would definitely recommend it to everybody. If you're into these kind of
psychological thrillers,
movies.
That too.
But I don't think the first one is necessarily, I don't consider that a bad movie. It gets grouped in with bad movies. I don't consider it a bad movie. Two and three, I do consider so bad they're good.
Well, that's what happened when different people, put their paws in somebody else's shit. We get garbage most of the time. Like, let's go back to another franchise for a minute. Like, look at Aliens. Look what happened to what Ridley Scott did to what he basically helped create back in 1978-79. And then when we got like Prometheus and Alien Covenant, look what he fucking did with those. It made it worse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's basically what I've been trying to say lately is just watch it once and then form your own opinion.
Like I said, Sleepaway Camp isn't for everybody, and the sequels are for even less people. But I love them.
Well, if I could figure out where to find Survivor and Return to Sleepaway Camp, I would love to at least see those so I can at least say I watched them. Am I missing another one, actually?
The only other one that's loosely based would be Son of Sleepaway Camp. The one I was telling you about. Which is, you can find that one cheap. It's Memorial Day Massacre. But make it Son of Sleepaway Camp, they just replaced the music with the music from the first Sleepaway Camp. Just called it a sequel. And if you do find the Son of Sleepaway Camp version of it, it has a really gratuitous porn scene, just a straight up hardcore porn that they just cut into the movie for no reason. About halfway through the movie.
Wow.
It has none of the same character. It's literally just a porn scene that they took from another porn and just threw into the movie.
That's funny. Wow. That's incredible.
Hey, that's fucking random.
Yeah.
What would you expect from a knockoff Sleepaway Camp sequel?
Well, it's better than having, Night of the Living Dead and all on everybody's TVs, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that will teach people. Yeah. That'll throw them off. Whatever.
But yeah, I guess that's all I have to say about the sequels, man.
Well, that's good, man. So, once again, I appreciate you for hosting this piece of shit podcast.
No, I'm joking. You guys letting me talk about these movies.
It wasn't going to be us. That's for sure. But, you definitely showed how much you appreciate these films. And, I mean, I don't want to always say, all these films we talk about are trash or I have a good time with these shitty ones or something. But, if it's well done, then it would be great. It would be great to have. But other than that, I'm not worried.
Yeah.
I don't know if Tessa's going to be available, but because the little one is definitely making her work right now. But anyway, Dustin, it was a pleasure to have you. And if there's any other shitty sequels that you would like to suggest to us in the near future, please let us know, because we would probably be down to talk about how shitty they are, depending on what they are.
I'll try to find some real shit for you guys next time.
Well, I'll be thinking too. So I'll be thinking of some interesting one. Like, there's two series that I would love to talk about. And it's kind of funny because Tessa hasn't even, we haven't even finished it. The easy one to finish, which is Code Prey. It's a foreign film. There's like only two of them in the U.S. that you can actually see because the third one is strictly overseas. It never got imported over. So that's like the only Waymiss aspect of it. But the third one in the series is basically like a prequel where it would have been nice to see anyway because it would have actually filled in a story of the little boy from the first Code Prey. But that's about it.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
All right. Well, for everybody else listening, that was it. Game over. Go cut yourself and, like, get pulled on, like, strings of campground bondage. Because everything is just going to be happening right in your front doorsteps. And it might even be battery acid, for all we know, getting slammed right into your face. And fish iron taken off. Part that should not be taken off, especially by a Jeep. Anyway, the point of this is I hope you survived this, and maybe next time it will be a little bit more better. We did have some
I do see why Dustin said gave you the title with genocidal and homicidal and all that into it, because if you listen to how you like introduce the episode and do the outro to the episode. I'm like, nobody can see my face right now, but I'm raising eyebrows when he does this. Like, anyway, oh, really?
Well, anyway, that was it. Game over. Have a good time. Don't go to this fucking camp, especially if there's an Angela there. Run away. And, otherwise, if you are there and there is a such thing as an Angela there, make sure you're a good boy or girl. Don't do anything or stupid. Other. Yeah, yeah. And just, you know, have fun, I guess. Until next time, my name was Paul Dolsky.
I'm Dustin Walker.
And I'm Tessa Baker.
And we want you to
stay scary.